I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We are continuing our conversation on teens, addiction, and recovery with author and addiction specialist Alan Berger and Lana, who is a recovering alcoholic. So thanks for sticking with us. And I want to broaden this out a little bit, Alan. We've been talking mainly about alcohol because that was the drug that both of you used. But in general, what other addictions do teens possibly face?
Well, that's a great question because it's really the whole gamut of drugs that are out there. What we see right now is there's an incredible increase of the use of crystal meth. I mean, that is just an epidemic problem right now in the United States. So that's a really, really popular drug, to crystal meth. There's still a lot of crack cocaine out on the streets. Cocaine, people are using that. Believe it or not, heroin has come back. And especially some of the opiates like OxyContin, which are really, really popular now. So those are the things. Marijuana is still up there. You know, even with Lana's story, as we heard, it wasn't just alcohol that she was using. She was drinking alcohol, but before we came on the show, she was telling me about the marijuana that she smoked. And that was true for me. It's like today there's rarely a person that's just, let's say, drinking alcohol. We're typically using a whole spectrum of different drugs.
Lana, how easy is it for people who are your age, in your experience, and everyone's experience is different, to access whether it's marijuana or perhaps some of the harder drugs?
It is way too easy for adolescents to access any kind of narcotic. You can find it anywhere. You can turn the wrong corner and come across a dealer. So you can find drugs in treatment. I mean, it's pretty easy to get high.
So it sounds like your discipline then has to be that much stronger.
Exactly.
What do you tell people, Alan, when, you know, they're faced with the reality that in many situations, and as Lana argues, even in recovery, you might be able to get your hands on something that has been your bane in the past?
Yeah, well, that's a good point because, see, we cannot insulate someone. You know, drugs, the use of drugs in this society, it's omnipresent. So what the issue becomes one of is what is one's commitment to recovery? And that is learning to say no. And what was that big campaign? Just say no. I mean, that really, that's apropos here.
Do you really believe that? And what I mean is, do you really believe it's as simple as saying no? What can you do to get people to know or to help people get to know?
Well, that's a good question, right? Because what it comes down to, recovery is about this moment. You know, I asked Lana, well, what's the most important thing or most challenging thing in your recovery today? You know what she said, and it was really very insightful on her part. She says, it's staying in the now. So right now is when I have my commitment to my recovery. So if I get approached, I need to check in with what my commitment is right now. A lot of people have to turn to their higher power to ask for help at that point in time because what we know is just based on our own resources, meaning alone I can't deal with this. But with your help, with the help of counselors, with the help of a higher power, a God of our understanding, we can go ahead and tackle this problem.
Lana, we just did something on spirituality and recovery. When you get to a point where you think, I'm challenged, what or who do you turn to?
Are you asking if I have a higher power?
It can be. I'm talking about higher power, friends, family. I mean, who's there in your corner?
I turn to my sponsor. I turn to my friends. I have a very, rational idea of a higher power. It's I'm powerless, therefore there's something more powerful than myself. I'm not a big fan of God or any of that. That's just my personal choice.
Sounds like you've got a lot of backup in your life among people who you trust.
Yes, but it's taken a while to build that.
I was going to ask, do you think that you would have trusted people like this before when you were drinking and getting high?
No, there is no trust when you're using.
Well, I really appreciate both of you sharing your stories and your journey. Thank you.
Thank you.
We were talking with Lana, a recovering alcoholic who received treatment and now volunteers at Visions Adolescent Drug Abuse Treatment in Malibu, California. Also with Alan Berger, the author of 12 Stupid Things That Mess Up Recovery, Avoiding Relapse Through Self-Awareness and Right Action. They both joined us here at our NPR West studios. Most black women living with HIV or AIDS got infected through high-risk sex with men. Marvelyn Brown says she's HIV positive because she did not consider the risks. She's a former athlete who now travels the country telling her story and championing personal responsibility. She's written a memoir about her journey. The book is called The Naked Truth, Young, Beautiful, and HIV Positive. Marvelyn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So you were 19 when you found out you were HIV positive. You get very specific with your story. You say the moment took place at 2:15 p.m. on July 17th, 2003. So obviously you were keeping track.
Yeah, and it was like 53 degrees outside.
Wow.
Yeah, I know everything.
What else do you remember? And what do you remember feeling?
I remember a blank feeling because I did not care about HIV. I never thought it could happen to me. It just wasn't an issue for me, so I didn't know anything about it. So when the doctor gave me the information, I just looked at him, and he was like, I've never got this reaction before, and I'm thinking, because I don't know what it is. And I could tell on his face that it was something a little bit more serious. And you know, that's when it hit me that this may be something, you know, I'm concerned about. So I was basically blank because I didn't know what HIV was, but I also was curious to learn about it.
You literally didn't know what HIV was?
I had heard about it, but I did not care at all. I mean, it wasn't like HIV was never there. I just never thought it was an issue for me, especially being 19. I was more concerned about my social life with my friends. I was the athlete, you know, the prom, things of that nature, never HIV.
Now, after you were diagnosed, you went on to have a relationship with someone that you call Prince Charming. You wanted to be with him again, let me say. And you went back after you were diagnosed to be with him. Tell me what happened. It sounds like it was very surprising and a kind of a wake-up call.
Well, I call him my Prince Charming because I was 19, and he's everything a 19-year-old girl would want. He was a man with his own place, his own car, you know, a job. And so, you know, me, you know, growing up, you know, watching Disney movies and fairy tales and things of that nature, I wanted that fairy tale ending. And so after I discovered that I was HIV positive and I had actually contracted it through him, and, you know, I found out, you know, he was HIV positive and things like that, I'm thinking, well, you know, it sucks that I just got an HIV, but in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, we may actually live, have a happy, positive life afterwards. And, you know, I still wanted to be with him, although he didn't want to be with me because at that time, my HIV, basically my Nashville community had found out that I was HIV positive and it was spreading, and he didn't want to be affiliated with that. But it came one time, you know, when we were going to, well, we did have sex again, and he pulled out a condom. And we used the condom that time after, you know, I'm HIV positive.
After he infected you.
Yeah, yeah.
So let me get this straight. He infected you, you went back to him, and then he didn't want to be associated with you because other people knew about you.
Right, and he was scared his own status would be revealed. They would, you know, he was scared people would think, oh, she got it from him and things like that.
What was it that you think made you go back to him when many other people would say, I'm so angry, I want to smack this guy up the head or worse?
First of all, I was 19, very naive and very vulnerable. But that's why I call him my Prince Charming, because he was, you know, my everything. And I'm like, this is, you know, at this time, I'm thinking this is such a terrible situation. You know, at this time, my family's, you know, like, why aren't you mad at him and things like that? But I was really trying to be with this guy.
When you talk to young people now, and you have traveled the world talking to young people, what do you tell them about decision making?
I tell them decision making is so important. Because it is unknown whether he knew he had HIV when he had given it to me, but he probably did know. And I tell them choices are everything, because I have to be responsible for the decision that I made. because I look at it as I chose not to use a condom and I chose to have sex with him. And so now I have to deal with the consequences of HIV. So responsibility is very important. And actually being 19 years old and diagnosed with HIV, you know, being an athlete and spoiled in a lot of ways, I did not want to take responsibility for my actions.
Your book is subtitled Young, Beautiful, and HIV Positive, and the cover is a picture of complete glamour. You know, you have pictures from when you were a teenager. You look great on the cover. You look great. Do you think that helps you in a way in telling your story?
Well, thank you first, because I know I do look good. But in a way, I feel like young people can connect with it more. You know, here lately, I've been constantly accused of glamorizing HIV because of the way I look. And in no way am I glamorizing HIV. I'm talking about it. You know, marveling is glamorous, fabulous, all these things, but HIV is still a very hard disease to live with. So I look at it like, you know, young people look at me and say, oh, she's beautiful, you know, she's cute, she could be my friend, or, you know, I could be her, or I want to be her. And that leaves that dialogue open, you know, to want to know more about HIV because they can see myself in them.
Do you think that when it comes to sexual responsibility, do you believe that in the idea that some people have that a culture of glamour, including hip hop's culture of glamour, actually can help enforce stereotypes that lead to sexual behavior that's not smart?
I know as far as me in the glamour, I always go back to self-responsibility. It really does have to start with the person. They have to make a choice to want to get educated about HIV and learn about it. And I really think people should just realize that it's a 100% preventable disease. It's a disease you don't have to get. It's something that you have to acquire. So I